Me?
Can you be a little louder, Frederica? They're going to do my volume.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, I'll keep talking. We're going to be going shortly, and we don't have a, quote, clock on this, so I won't be, you know, wrapping you up really quickly the way I sometimes do.
I'll try to be less generous with my words than I usually am.
You can, you know, just do what you do, and that is great. And there's just one other item I should share, and that is that when I'm speaking with you, I'll be turning toward a monitor that is actually to my left on our set. And if you can see my image, which I believe you can, it'll look like I'm kind of not looking at you, but I actually am.
Okay, are you looking at me now?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Am I looking at you?
Straight on.
I'm looking at this little dot in front of you.
No, well, all right, you're to me, you are looking directly at me. And to you, okay. I appear to be kind of profile-ish, I think.
Good.
Ready?
I got lettuce in my teeth, literally.
If you need to deal with that, that's fine. I think they are set to go.
I just while gobbling something down. Okay.
The life of a U.S. representative. Sure, I think we are. Are you ready to go, Congresswoman?
Ready.
Yep, we're good. Congresswoman Moore, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it is so wonderful always to be with you, Frederica.
So your resolution says legislation is needed to prevent individuals with a history of violence against women from purchasing or possessing a firearm. Would that legislation be needed only in the event that the High Court rules against current law, which does prohibit that?
Well, we are seeing right now in the Supreme Court a decision that was made at the lower court. So we're not going to wait a year from now to see what the court does. We're trying to be really preemptive now so that there won't be any gap in support or services. I mean, for 20 years or more, it's sort of been the law of the land that if people go out and get restraining orders, if there's been a history of violence and domestic violence, that you really don't have to wait until someone actually pulls the trigger. And we see that, you know, firearms is the, you know, 88, almost 90% of the cause of death in a domestic violence situation, that those interventions can be made. And so we saw in the Ramini case, you know, guy, not a nice guy, had been was a known domestic violent person. And when he had his gun taken from him, he appealed it and won that on appeal. So that issue is before the Supreme Court, and we are hopeful that the Supreme Court will stand up former law. But until then, we're going to move forward to make sure that there are no gaps in our ability to protect women from what we see as a rising problem.
Did you get the sense that the court was signaling that they are inclined to uphold that 1994 law?
Frederica, it's really hard to tell. We were encouraged to see that, you know, only a couple of people, the usual suspects, Clarence Thomas and et cetera, seemed to be wanting to stay with the Ramini decision, but that other jurists were vigorously questioning in ways that caused us to believe that maybe they would reverse Ramini. But we, you know, we can't depend on like crossing our fingers to hope that this will happen. And so we're being proactive.
And so would the legislation that you would put forward mirror the 1994 law, or would it be expanded?
Well, it, you know, in 1994, as you know, we passed the Violence Against Women Act, which was really foundational. And what we, you know, what the Violence Against Women Act allowed agencies and law enforcement to be able to do was to anticipate. And it strengthened law enforcement efforts by funding violence prevention programs and so on. This challenge that Ramini has put forth really sort of threw the whole process through the roof. So one of the things that we feel very concerned about is whether or not the Ramini decision will prevent our law enforcement assets from making those interventions as has been the case.
So this is personal for you, and you expressed that in introducing your resolution. What happened that drives you?
Well, Frederica, you know, I'm 72 years old, so I've been around a long time. And, you know, when I was in my early 20s, long before there was the Violence Against Women Act, long before there were any hotlines to call or anything, a then boyfriend pulled a gun out to my head because he was too sassy or whatever, and threatened to shoot me. And I, being very foolish, you know, told him, "You just go on and shoot it or eat it," you know. And so he just said I was crazy, which I probably was, because he could have shot and killed me. I guess I'm grateful that he didn't. But, you know, we should not have to depend on luck, because there are too many women who are not lucky. There was a report done by End Abuse Wisconsin that I found very, very distressing, to be frank with you. We had seen a decline in domestic abuse, thanks to the work of a lot of agencies all around the country. But in the last years, there's been a huge uptick. And in 2021, 2022, we saw a huge uptick in domestic violence, and particularly with the use of guns in Wisconsin. We've seen this have a disparate impact in minority communities, but with regard to the split between urban and rural communities, it's just about half and half. So it's not just an urban problem, it's a rural problem. And of course, the victims disproportionately seem to be women. We can't pretend that it's not a social problem, that women, children, other family members that are nearby aren't affected by this scourge. And there's, like I said, there's been a huge uptick in the last couple of years.
In fact, we had some statistics for the state of Wisconsin which mirror what you were just talking about. In 2022, domestic violence claimed 96 lives in this state. 88.5% were from a firearm, and as you noted, it's evenly split between rural and urban areas. And so those are extremely alarming statistics, as you point out. Why is it so difficult, though, to kind of translate those statistics into meaningful protective policy?
Well, Frederica, quite frankly, I think that people have elevated, you know, the quote-unquote Second Amendment, you know, above and beyond our value for life. And, you know, it just seems like there's, when you look at those data, the same data that you were just sharing, by far, these homicides occur because there's an available firearm. You know, the Remedy case is just such an example. But here's somebody, known abuser, you know, caught beating his partner in a parking lot. And when a passerby, a stranger, you know, witnessed it and sort of confronted him, he shot at her and still won this decision in court. And so, you know, with him, you know, talking about his Second Amendment rights, but what about the right of the women to live? And so we're hoping that the court will recognize that in the heat of the moment, the presence of a gun is almost a guarantee that somebody, probably a woman, is going to die.
What is the connection between misogyny, violence against women, and firearm violence, even the increase in mass shootings?
Let me just say this. Let me take that last part first. It was stunning to me to learn that many of the mass shootings that we see are people who had prior behavior as domestic abusers. So, you know, it's not a surprise, surprise, here's a mass killer, but they had been people who had been engaged in domestic violence before the act of being a mass killer. So there's very clearly a connection. And of course, misogyny, one of the things that occurred during COVID, when we had all these commercials saying, you're safer at home, is when we started seeing really a huge uptick in domestic violence. And I really had to come out and say, my God, there are so many people who are not safer at home during this period. That COVID really unleashed, I think, a lot of the misogyny. I mean, one of the things in my stewardship on the Ways and Means Committee, we had lots of complaints of women experiencing abuse because they got the rescue checks that we sent out, and many of their male partners would abuse them over those resources. And so, yeah, misogyny, just the environment. I mean, the environment of the pandemic, you know, and the stressors that caused, we think, contributes to domestic violence as well. But I tell you what really contributes to domestic violence is the presence of a gun.
Congresswoman Gwen Moore, we leave it there. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Be well. Okay.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Can you hear me now? Okay. Yeah. I'm just saying. I think there was for resolution, like, you know,
I cannot.
Okay, so listen, what she was saying is that there was some confusion because my legislation was introduced in Domestic Violence Awareness Month ahead of the Remini decision.
Okay.
Frederica's question sort of...
Okay.
Oh. It was just simply, it was a resolution recognizing the intersection as opposed to it being in response to Rahimi.
Okay. The reason I asked about the legislation was because the final pages of that resolution, it said, so be it resolved that we need legislation to prevent individuals with a history of violence against women from possessing or purchasing a firearm. So, and then the second point was about prevention, I think. I'm not looking at the resolution now, but that stood out to me, the item about legislation, and confused me a little because I didn't understand exactly what the status of the current law, federal law, was in light of the Fifth Circuit's ruling in this case, right? So it's all a little... Okay.
Yeah, let me ask a question, because right now, we've been just, how have courts been treating it? Has it just been a presumption that they could make these interventions and for the past 20 years? Okay, so let's try to film that over again, that question.
Is that a legit question,
can't do that.
Given all this?
Do you want me to, I can give a different answer. I don't know what how your editors will feel about this.
Oh, we can do whatever, but, and we're responding to Samara's concern that I didn't tee that up particularly clearly, apparently, but does my question stand? Would legislation be needed only in the event that the high court rules against current law, which does prohibit people under domestic violence restraining orders from possessing firearms?
So it's okay? You're good?
Me? I'm asking you if you're okay with that question and the response you'd like to give.
Yeah. Okay.
But no.
She's whispering practically.
you and I are the only ones that can't hear this conversation. But no, you probably can. And she will advise.
She says it's okay.
She does? Okay. All right. And it's okay as is, or I need to re-ask the question?
Re-ask the question and then use the one you want.
All right. So are we still rolling, folks?
Yep. Yes.
And would you like me to do that, Marissa? All right. So would the legislation be needed only in the event that the high court rules against current law, which does prohibit people under domestic violence restraining orders from possessing firearms?
Well, yes, Frederica, this legislation would be needed were the high court to uphold the Fifth Circuit decision. I mean, ever since the Violence Against Women Act was enacted in 1994, courts have been able to deny domestic violence abusers, people who have court orders, deny them possession of a firearm. And so we're concerned that if the Supreme Court upholds this decision, that legislation would definitely be needed. So we're just being preemptive. We don't want to wait until, next June of 2024. To see what they're going to do, because we absolutely don't want there to be any lapse in the ability for the court to deny, a gun to a known batterer. And so we think that this this circuit court decision could create a lot of confusion and really put women's lives at risk. So we don't think there was any time to waste.
All right, that is great. Is that good with the collective brain trust? All right, Congresswoman, thank you, and thank you for doing that and expanding your time with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you all. Good luck with the editors. Tell them don't be mad at me.
No one would ever be mad at you. Well, not
on, under the bus.
Not on that score. But thank you. Thank you so much. And we wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, absolutely. I'll be busy working.
Yeah.
Cutting up green pepper and onion. That's my task.
Nice.
Always.
Nice. Don't cry too hard. All right. Thank you.
I will.
Bye.